Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5163, Joseph J. Feilbark II et al., appellants versus United States Department of Transportation et al. Mr. Chusey for the appellants, Ms. Russell for the appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors. Your Honors, the question in this case is why the APA should not be available to the appellants who claim that the FAA arbitrarily violated its own rules governing the salary level of the Albuquerque Air Traffic Control Center at which they work. It's well settled in this court and in the Supreme Court that there's a strong presumption of reviewability under the APA. I think we all recognize here, nobody's pretending, that under the Civil Service Reform Act, this court and the Supreme Court have articulated a jurisprudential reason why the APA should not be available for review of personnel claims by federal employees covered by the Civil Service Reform Act. The question in this case is why, where since 1996, FAA employees have not, for the most part, been covered by the Civil Service Reform Act, and where this is not a personnel action, and where there is no other avenue of review, administrative or judicial, for the appellants at the Albuquerque Control Center, why the APA should not be available as a last resort, where what the FAA has done, in essence, is to establish an articulate series of rules governing how salary levels at FAA facilities were going to be established, and then in the case of the Albuquerque Center, simply tossed those rules, came up with another number, and that's the number that the FAA is defending here today. The Judge Leon in this case held that, in essence, when Congress, through the Transportation Acts, established a different system for FAA employees and gave the administrator of the FAA the authority to come up with a pay system that would be more flexible and that would ensure that the FAA could establish pay levels that would attract air traffic controllers, that it would defy common sense for air traffic controllers to then be able to proceed into district court under the APA and argue that that somehow the FAA has arbitrarily violated those rules. What the judge said was that when Congress articulated the Transportation Acts, in essence, they established a system, Congress established a system that was similar in structure to the Civil Service Reform Act, and therefore the deference that the judiciary owes to Congress's intent through the Civil Service Reform Act should apply as well to the Transportation Acts. With all due respect to the district court,
that's doesn't that seem exactly right?
I'm sorry?
Doesn't that seem exactly right?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't. I mean, if the district court is correct, and I want to be clear what we're not talking about in this case. We're not talking about the average personnel action to which an employee may be subjected by the FAA. What we are talking about is the salary that an employee receives from the government for the work that he or she is performing. Any ordinary civil service employee, Civil Service Reform Act or no, if their pay level is reduced or if their pay is allegedly incorrectly calculated, that employee can go to the special counsel. When Congress established the special counsel in the Civil Service Reform Act in 1979, they were given the authority to hear and adjudicate all kinds of prohibited personnel practices. The Congress did not extend the special counsel to FAA employees with a single exception, and that exception is whistleblowing allegations. Other than that, air traffic controllers have no administrative review for the kinds of decisions that we're talking about here. And these are not minor decisions. The average air traffic controller at Albuquerque, according to the appellants, is being paid about $5,000 less per year than the salary to which they were entitled under the pay rules established by the FAA. There are approximately, on an annual basis, 250 employees at the Albuquerque Center. And so for the past 10 years, since 1998, January 1999, the allegation is that the Albuquerque Center has been paying for 10 years 250 employees about $5,000 less than they deserve. The FAA says, and Judge Leon agrees, that there is no recourse for this. And I ask in my brief, and I ask it again here, if the appellants cannot come to the district court and at least argue that the salary decision was arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable, what is to preclude the FAA from simply deciding on a month-to-month basis that they really need this money for another endeavor? They want to build a runway in Chicago.
Isn't this result just a consequence of Graham, Fornero, Vasto, and these other cases?
No, it really isn't.
Why
and,
not?
Because Fornero, Judge Roberts, really articulated, I think, the set of rules that govern the deference that the courts give to the Civil Service Reform Act. And what he said was that for an action that is administratively reviewable, the action in Fornero was the decision of the Office of Personnel Management to apply in a particular way a retirement rule to certain employees. And those employees went to the district court under the APA, and the district court turned them down, and it went up to the Court of Appeals, this court. And Judge Roberts said, and it's been true since Carducci, since this court decided Carducci, that because the Civil Service Reform Act has erected a lattice of interlocking review procedures, some of which go to a court, such as the Merit Systems Protection Board, some of which go to the special counsel, some of which go to grievance procedures under collective bargaining agreements. An employee is not permitted to circumvent that lattice, that structure, and seek review in the district court under the APA. Those procedures are not available to the appellants. They're not available to anybody at the Federal Aviation Administration.
Isn't there the same problem in Fausto, that the employee didn't have a right to go to the MSPB, and the court, nor to the court under the CSRA, and the court said that it's precisely because of that that they concluded that there was no judicial review?
Yes, that is what the court said in Fausto. But it's important to recognize, I think, that what the employee in Fausto was complaining about was a decision that was made with respect to him. And under the Civil Service Reform Act, where Congress has said some decisions have administrative review and on to judicial review, other decisions go to the special counsel, other decisions have no review, where Congress has made that decision, then the court will respect Congress's intent and say that where Congress has not provided for judicial review in a particular situation, but has provided for judicial review in other situations, then the court will not allow an employee to go to end run that process and seek APA review. But that is different here because the employees were taken out of the Civil Service Reform Act. None of those processes, with the exception of adverse personnel actions, which FAA employees can take now starting in 1999, to the Merit Systems Protection Board. That is the only instance with respect to a decision applicable to an employee in which the employee can seek administrative review and then on to the court. These employees have not been subjected to a decision that was made with respect to them. The decision was made with respect to the facility at which they work, and that decision affects the salary that they receive. And that decision is in clear violation of 65 pages of rules that the FAA has articulated, which step by step establishes the manner in which air traffic at a particular facility is going to be calculated and the particular formulas that will be applied to turn that traffic index into a salary level. And they violated it here.
You rely only in terms of your cause of action on the APA, right?
Well, I think with respect to the collective bargaining members.
No, for your cause of action here. Oh, go ahead. I'm finished. No,
with respect to the collective bargaining members, I think Mr. Feilbark filed or attempted to file a grievance of the salary decision. That grievance was denied, and he came into court, and we articulated 5 U.S.C. 7121 as an area of that would allow the court to review that decision. Obviously,
as a basis for the cause of action.
I'm sorry.
Finish your sentence.
No, as I think 28 U.S.C. 1331 provides the necessary jurisdiction, but I think the 7121 indicates that it's an exception to the ordinary rule under the Civil Service Reform Act that employees have no right to judicial review.
So you think 7121A is an alternative basis for a cause of action here other than the APA?
For the collective bargaining unit members, yes.
Uh-huh. And what support do you have for that?
Well, as we articulated in our brief, in 1994, Congress amended 7121, whereas previously it had said that a grievance procedure in a collective bargaining agreement would be the exclusive remedy for any claims arising under the collective bargaining agreement. In 1994, Congress added the word administrative, thereby rendering the clause to say that 7121 would, that the collective bargaining agreement, the grievance process, would be the exclusive administrative remedy for any cause arising within the grievance process. And the Federal Circuit, in deciding that essentially provided a waiver of collective bargaining unit members who have filed a grievance.
The Federal Circuit ruled that?
Yes, it did.
In what case?
Mudge.
Federal Circuit's Mudge decision concluded that the cause of action was based on the Tucker Act.
No, Your Honor.
No?
No. No.
Okay. Do you think Mudge concluded that the cause of action in that case rested on 7121A? That's your theory of Mudge?
Well, that's my theory of Mudge. It's the 11th Circuit's theory of Mudge. Yeah.
So what's your argument about the relationship between 7121A and our case law, Graham, and the other cases that have been decided after 7121A?
Well, I think what we're all seeking to do here is to ascertain Congress's intent when it erects these processes for federal employees. And what the Federal Circuit said, and what I think is really undeniable, and what the district court did not reach, is that where Congress changes the clause exclusive remedy and adds the word administrative to make it the exclusive administrative remedy, that implies that Congress intended to provide those particular employees with a judicial remedy as well. Otherwise, there's no point to adding the word administrative after exclusive.
I guess I was reading these cases, including the Supreme Court Whitman cases, looking at 7121 as not precluding judicial review.
That's right.
But not as itself providing for judicial review. And I think Judge Tatel is asking whether 7121A actually, whether your argument is that it implicitly provides for judicial review. I thought thought Mudge was based on the Pay Act or something like that. Is that wrong? As a cause of action?
The grievance was under the Pay Act. The government's argument, the grievance was that the agency had violated the Pay Act with respect to these, but had violated the Pay Act and the contract.
That was the cause of action.
When they ultimately went to court?
Yeah.
Yes, that was the action.
So 7121, the only issue about that was whether it cut off the cause of action.
Fair enough, but I would argue...
Is that right?
Yes, I think that's right. But I would also argue that in this case, the same argument would apply with respect to the APA.
That 7121 doesn't cut off.
7121 does not cut off. The legislative history, which I think the Federal Circuit cited in Mudge, was that to any cause of action that was otherwise available, and we would argue that the APA in this case is otherwise available for the reasons that that I've already argued.
What about the CBA? Does, with respect to those who are covered by it, doesn't it make it the exclusive?
No.
It doesn't?
No. It doesn't. I mean, the FAA cited a provision of the CBA, and I quoted that in my brief, and it says nothing about its exclusivity. And even if it did say...
It says it shall be the exclusive procedure available to the parties and the employees in the unit for resolving grievances.
Yes. However, the position classification standard contains an exception to that. The position classification standard, which governs these pay rules, provides for its own appeal process independent of the collective bargaining agreement. And that appeal process can only be initiated by the facility manager or by NATCA. And Mr. Feilbach requested the facility manager to file the grievance, and she declined. And we would argue that's a final decision for all intents and purposes, one way or the other.
Your time's up. We'll give you a couple minutes in reply.
Thank you, Judge Thomas.
Mr. Russell?
Thank you. May it please the court. Appellees respectfully request that the court affirm Judge Leon's memoranda and orders granting appellees motions and holding that the review procedures of the FAA's personnel management system provide the exclusive relief for appellees' claims related to classification of their positions. As reflected by 49 U.S.C. 40122, Congress delegated the FAA the authority to establish its own personnel management system to address the unique demands of its workforce. Expressly, Congress delegated the FAA the authority to set up employment terms and conditions as it saw fit as relates to the hiring, training, location of personnel, and pertinent here, the compensation of its employees. And that is what the FAA did. Under the FAA's personnel management system, classification determinations are not subject to judicial review. There are two means by which FAA employees can seek review. One method for those subject to the collective bargaining agreement, and one means for those who are not subject to the collective bargaining agreement. Now, with regard to the collective bargaining agreement, there is an appeal process, but that appeal process notes, or the provisions of the appeal process, states expressly that that is the exclusive review procedure for classification determination. There are no further appeals beyond that of the classification committee. Now, for those who are not subject to the collective bargaining agreement, the FAA also has provision by which those individuals can seek review of classification matters. and the individuals can either go to the organization for purposes of seeking classification review or the Human Resources Department. So contrary to what appellants have stated, there is a means by which employees of the FAA, both those who are subject to the collective bargaining agreement and those who are not, can seek review of classification determinations.
Judge Taylor.
No, you go ahead.
I thought that the supervisors in both cases said they had no authority in this case. Is that wrong? Maybe I misrecollect. I thought they both said that they were denying review because they didn't have any authority to do anything.
Well, as for the employee subject to the collective bargaining agreement, an employee can petition for review of a classification determination, but ultimately it's the facility manager and the NACA representative who marshals that appeal consideration forward. It is true that the facility manager, I believe, stated that she had no authority to proceed forward with the classification determination. However, there is a method by which such classification determinations can be reviewed for purposes of the employee subject to the collective bargaining agreement. And similarly,
I thought in this case she said there was no method. Is that right? You think she was wrong? Is that what you mean?
She could have. There was no method for her to individually consider the classification determination, but certainly the classification determination could have been reviewed by the facility manager jointly with the NACA representative. But there was no independent. There was no provision for her to independently determine make a classification determination.
Why didn't that take place? Why didn't she review it in general rather than specifically?
Well, I believe that one of the plaintiffs did, that NACA actually did consider the classification matter at issue here and decided not to move forward because it concluded that the FAA's determination comported with the collective bargaining agreement.
And what about the plaintiffs not covered by the CBA?
They can use a mechanism by which their organization can review classification determinations or, if appropriate, the Human Resources Department. So there is an avenue for them to seek relief for purposes of classification determination.
Did the supervisor say in that case also that there was no
motive? I am not sure whether she relied specifically on that policy in making her determination. But I guess the overriding point is that there is a provision that the FAA employees can access or avail themselves of for purposes of classification determinations, both those subject to the collective bargaining agreement as well as those who are not.
What do you think Congress was trying to do when it amended 7121A by adding the word administrative procedures?
Well, I certainly know what the 11th Circuit...
No, I'm asking you what you... I know what the 11th Circuit said. What do you think it was doing?
Perhaps clarifying that the collective bargaining agreement was the exclusive remedy for purposes of review of matters subject to the collective bargaining agreement. That is, it was the exclusive administrative
Why did it need to do, what made it do that? Why was that necessary at the time?
Now this is just speculating.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know, but maybe employees were seeking other avenues for purposes of review of matters that were subject to collective bargaining agreements, and the Congress just wanted to clarify that. Now that's solely speculation.
But under the original, without that language, they didn't. Prior to the amendment, it said it provided the, quote, exclusive procedure, right?
That is correct.
So why would you need to add administrative to make clear that they couldn't pursue any other administrative procedures?
That I don't know, Your Honor.
Yeah.
As I said, you know, the 11th Circuit has come to a conclusion that that means that the collective bargaining agreement is the exclusive administrative remedy for purposes of those types of actions subject to the collective bargaining agreement. But I would add that I apologize, it's the Fed Circuit and Mudge. I would add that the court did not address the issue of whether the terms of Mr. Mudge's collective bargaining agreement independently deprived the court of jurisdiction. And that is one of the arguments that we are making here, as can be seen by the appeal process, which is part of the collective bargaining agreement. There is a process for classification review, but that is the sole, that is the limitation of any review for purposes of classification matters.
So say again what you said about Mudge. What do you view Mudge?
The court in Mudge did not address whether the terms of Mr. Mudge's collective bargaining agreement independently deprive the court of jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. That is one of the arguments that we are making here, or more specifically, a review of the collective bargaining agreement, or specifically the provisions governing classification review, set forth a procedure for classification review, and it is clear that that is the limit of any review for classification determinations. Ultimately, the determination of the Classification Appeal Review Committee, I believe that is the name, is final and binding. And the appeal procedure expressly states that there is no further appeal beyond that committee.
I thought maybe 7121, the idea was that there are some provisions that are appealable to the Federal Circuit, right? There are some grievances that you can ultimately get to the Federal Circuit, right? And that with the word administrative not there, you could regard this as saying 7121 is cutting off that kind of judicial review. And that the purpose of putting in exclusive administrative review is that 7121 is only about administrative review. That is, you have no other, that is, if it's covered by the collective bargaining agreement, you have to go in that route administratively. And it just doesn't say anything one way or the other about judicial review, which has to come from somewhere else. Is that wrong? Is that, in other words, if you are, if leave aside for the moment FAA employees, other employees, who have a right for certain kinds of agency actions to go to the ultimately to the Federal Circuit, right? And also to go to the MPSB, et cetera.
Yes, MSB, certain rights, yes.
Right? So by saying that it's an exclusive administrative procedure, that means they can't do anything administratively, but it doesn't say they can't get the Federal Circuit review that they would ordinarily otherwise be able to get. And that's the reason for sticking in the word administrative, because the Federal Circuit and the Court of Claims was reading the words exclusive procedures as cutting off judicial review. Is that a sensible reading of this?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Right. So now we come to Mudge. And Mudge says that 7121A does not cut off judicial review. Why didn't they consider the question of whether the CSRA does? That is, why is the Fausto question not resolved in that case? Or do you think it is?
I don't believe that the Fausto question is resolved.
That's a question that people are arguing.
And I don't know if
us. Why was that not argued there? Or was it argued? They didn't.
I'm not sure if it was argued by either of the parties in the Mudge case. And I'm not quite sure why the court didn't address the argument. I guess the assumption, and I'm not basing this on anything, is that the Fausto case was not briefed or argued before the court in the Mudge case.
I don't know about the timing, actually, now that I think about it.
Fausto
came before Mudge, didn't it? I assume it
did. Mudge was 2000, and Fausto...
1987. Can I just ask one question about your law of the case argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
I have this feeling that This is a line of doctrine that's not relevant to this case at all. And none of the cases that you cited, or that either side cited in this discussion, has anything to do with a judge deciding an issue, no appeal happening, and the judge just changing his mind later in the course of the same case. Whereas the same judge, not a different panel, not a different judge, and not the same judge after an appeal. All the cases that you have there, both sides have, are all cases where the law of the case doctrine is important because it binds another judge or it binds the same judge after an appeal. Am I wrong about that? It just doesn't seem like law of the case has any application here at all.
That could be, Your Honor, but if it does apply, and this was actually an argument that the appellants made before the district court, and the district court responded, but if it does apply, I think the district court's determination was correct, that it could review its previous decision.
Well, I don't understand why this isn't governed by Rule 54B. Rule 54B says otherwise, that is, if it's not a final judgment, any order or other decision, however designated, that adjudicates fewer than all the claims or the rights does not end the action as to any of the claims and may be revised at any time before the entry of a judgment adjudicating all the claims. So why isn't this case, neither party is arguing Rule 54B. It seems like that's the only rule that governs here. Why? What am I missing? Usually when neither party argues the point, it's because they have a good reason and I'm missing something.
Well, I think in the lower court, the appellants argued that the law of the case doctrine applies, and the court addressed that particular issue. But I do agree with the court that 54B actually applies in this particular case. The judge did have the discretion to review his previous orders because the case had not been completely resolved at the point he did so. So I cannot disagree with the court that 54B might very well apply.
Okay, thank you.
Just to wrap up, the FAA's personnel management system does have an avenue through which its employees, both those who are subject to the collective bargaining agreement and those who are not, can seek review of classification determinations. But as correctly held by the district court, those determinations are not subject to judicial review. Clearly looking at the appeals process of the collective bargaining agreement as well as the FAA's own policies. Therefore, the appellees believe that Judge Leon's memorandum orders were correct in this case and respectfully request that this court affirm those determinations.
All right, thank you. Why don't you take a minute?
Thank you. I really just have three brief points. With respect to the ability of some of the appellants to appeal their classification, we argue this extensively in our briefs. The documents that the FAA is relying on are in the appendix at pages 110 and 111, and they permit the appeal of a classification of a position. It has nothing to do with the classification of a facility. The classification of a facility is determined by the position classification standard, and it's at pages 188 and 189 of the appendix. And those are the exclusive remedy. And it was, I think, correctly defined by Ms. Russell. You have the ability to go either to the facility manager or to NATCA, and if neither of them decides to move forward with the appeal of the salary level, then you have no further remedy. And in this case, in both instances, Judge Garland, and you're absolutely correct, in both instances, with respect to the collective bargaining unit member, Mr. Feilbark, and the supervisor, Mr. Todd, The same facility manager said in both instances that there was no point in her going forward with an appeal or a grievance because she was only appealing to the people who made the decision in the first place.
I take it, though, the union could have gone forward?
Yes, the union could have gone forward, and the union did not. And in fact, as we indicated, Mr. Feilbark filed an unfair labor practice charge with the Federal Labor Relations Authority. NATCA intervened and filed a grievance. The FLRA, a grievance about the same decision that Mr. Feilbark was complaining about. The FLRA dismissed the unfair labor practice charge because NATCA indicated it was moving forward to arbitration on the grievance. And once that decision was final by the Federal Labor Relations Authority dismissing the unfair labor practice charge, NATCA withdrew the grievance.
So
the employees themselves.
I understand, but so that's sort of a duty of fair representation problem, or what?
We're not suing NATCA. We're not.
No, you're not. But I mean, is that what you're saying? Is the union snookered you? Is that not you personally, obviously, but your client? Is that what you're saying? That is, they, in order to get the FLRA to reject the case, they pretended that they were going to file, and
yes,
then they withdrew.
Yes. That's what we're saying. But we're not.
Could you have gone back to FLRA at that point, saying that you based your decision on the filing of the unfair labor practice and they've now withdrawn it?
I don't know. Mr. Feilbark was unrepresented at the
time. No, I understand that.
I think the decision was made that this was an FAA issue. It was the FAA which was paying these employees. It was the FAA which had employed these employees. It was the FAA who issued the pay rules. And therefore, the FAA was going to be responsible for the decisions that were made.
Why didn't the union, do you have any idea why the union didn't want to press this? Speculation, even. I appreciate it's probably out extra record, but sometimes it's helpful to understand what's going on.
The Albuquerque Center has the lowest percentage of dues-paying NATCA members in the country.
Okay.
Okay. Just with respect to the Mudge issue, I don't think the APA was an issue in Mudge at all, which is why they didn't discuss Fausto. I believe that what had happened was the Federal Circuit had issued a series of decisions when employees would try to go to court, district court, or the district court on, for example, a Fair Labor Standards Act case, claim of denial of overtime or something similar. The district court on the government's motion would send the case to the claims court on the ground that since the monetary remedy was greater than $10,000, the claims court had jurisdiction. In the claims court, the government would move to dismiss on the ground that the grievance procedure was the exclusive remedy. And the Federal Circuit, in a decision, Clark versus Gibbs, and a series of others, dismissed such cases on the ground that the grievance process was exclusive. Congress then came in and added the word administrative to make clear that they were not extinguishing, that's why what you said in your colloquy with me was correct. Congress indicated that they were not extinguishing any other judicial remedies which may exist, independent of the grievance procedure. And what we're arguing here is that the APA is such a cause of action. Employees in Mr. Feilbark's situation would ordinarily have APA review of the salary decision, then the fact that there was a grievance process or a grievance decision would not extinguish the APA review.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.